tremendous guest today, and one of my good friends from the past. That's a man that I've done leadership work with for 10 years down here in Los Angeles, Mr. Love Jefferson. What a great story. From poverty, Samoa, all the way up through the NFL with the Bears, all the lessons of operating at that incredibly high level, and then finding ways to reintegrate from that journey to bring the treasure back to inner city youth, to corporate development, and the knowledge and the pearls of wisdom of this man. This is a do not miss episode.
Especially for those of you in leadership roles and are wanting to drive your teams to another level, he shares some golden nuggets on how to be a better leader and a better coach for your team. Don't want to miss this episode. All right, welcome to another episode of the Winner Folsom Podcast, your place for battle-tested leadership and resiliency. And we have an amazing guest for you today, don't we, Philip?
Oh, we do. This is one of my very favorite humans walking the planet. And so Mr. Love Jefferson is just a fascinating man. One of the, just proud to have worked side by side, shoulder by shoulder with this man delivering leadership programs for probably a decade here in Los Angeles, and to have just, you know, seen your impact and blast radius with humans from, you know, youth all the way up to corporate groups is just powerful. And one of the fascinating things about Love Jefferson is that he has been through the hero's journey of living in a honor-based culture, a warrior culture, and have actually gone to the height of the mountain. He was in the NFL. He was playing at the highest level. And then to actually have to return home with that treasure, have to reintegrate, have to transition back into what we would call the regular world or the pride-based world and redefine identity. This is a story that all of us veterans, all of us athletes, all of the people who are in a career of serving other people, sacrificing ourselves, our bodies, our souls in the service of others, and then having to make sense of that as we transition home. So, Love, your story embodies that, and it's just an honor to have you on today, man. I love you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It feels great to be in a circle of powerful men and connecting out there in the world of powerful men who's choosing to tune in and log in to get some information and some insight from people that have been out there doing amazing things, living life. The hero's journey, that was something that you introduced to me, Philip, back in the day. That was the framework that allowed for me to understand and serve as my compass on where I was at a particular time, and also where I had been at a particular time, maybe that had been holding me back as I'm looking in the rearview mirror, wondering why did things happen this way? Why am I where I'm at? And it's amazing how something as simple as a framework can help create a shift in someone's life or create focus on that telescope to see something clearly, which is the journey is forever and it's a long road. And you just hold steadfast to the mission and whatever it is that you have already set out to do. And then coming from just a background of sports, you know, and then looking at applied sports psychology and seeing how it works and learning about that later on, it also served as frameworks for life. People are important. You are important. The people watching this, you are important. Like there are people that are out there that look at you, look up to you, whether it's a stranger passing by, we're always impacting space. And that's something that I hold really strongly is wherever I go, whatever room I'm in, I'm taking up oxygen or I'm taking up space. And so if I'm not present, the whole situation is different. So like if one of us were not here, this whole podcast would be different. And so every time we're taking up space, you know, I look at it, it's like, how are you impacting that? Are you dead in the brain just thinking that, you know, no one cares or doesn't matter? Mm. When in fact, the person that you're sitting next to is getting some sense of energy, some form of energy that you can use to either uplift, build, motivate. You can be that one person at that right time that says the right thing that helps someone, and you may not even know that it happened. And for a lot of people in my life, I have a lot of people that don't know how much they have impacted me or given me the seeds to be able to bear the fruit as a father, as a husband, as a friend, as a community member to this day. So I love going into just diving into who are we? You know, you said something earlier about identity, and identity is very important. And there was one quote that I heard from a guy, and he says, you either know who you are, know what your identity is, know who you are, or the world is going to tell you who you are.
Josh, you just said that, I think, this week to the group.
Is that right?
Or something similar to that, right? Or you make your schedule, or it will be made for you by other people. Like, own your schedule, own your money, and all that stuff, or it will be owned for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be somebody or be somebody's fool, right?
Right.
So not many people get to actually work or even talk to NFL tight end, played with the Bears and played. So I want to just plumb that a little bit and see how much of that identity and experience really did inform even just what you just said about taking ownership of your role in a room. Like, there are NFL players who take plays off and they talk about them. People talk about, like, yeah, he's taking that play off. Like, he's not really blocking. He's like, oh, that was ticky-tack. Was that kind of an awareness brought to you through coaching? Like, did you have coaches who said, like, hey, every play, everything you do matters to us collectively?
Yeah, I think in the league, some people get it or some people don't. You know, you have to have, you know, some sort of natural ability or gift of size and speed in order to get there. But it's really not that challenging to get there. It's holding the place that's really hard. And, you know, I had a coach early on in the days, and this didn't come, I didn't remember this until later on my journey, you know, in my afterlife. But he says, you know, sports and being a warrior, if you will, it's not about hating the guy in front of you, like that edge player. It's not about hating him or want to demolish him and destroy him. It is loving the person next to me so much that I am willing to bust my ass and give it my all and do my best for him. It's not about that guy. And so that little switch, it's not about the challenge that's in front of you that you need to butt up against, but it's about loving the things that you love so much that you're willing to put it all on the line and prepare for it. And if there are certain formulas that people can align to, it's just in working with people, and we'll just go to just kind of the sports since we're talking about it. It's all about the people. So it's coaching is really
always
about,
right? Always. Yeah. Always. And no matter what systems or strategies, it's coming down to fucking people at some point.
They make it, they buy it, they produce it, they sell it, they speak it, they do it all. So if for some reason we're lacking an ability to have people skills, then you're swinging with a dull sword. You know, you're going to have a tough time out there. But it's understanding that people are important, and the coach's responsibility is to draw out the best in people. So that's what I look at coaches. Coaches are like, they see somebody with raw talent. I was recruited as an athlete, not a certain position, right? I was recruited as an athlete. And they say, okay, well, let's figure out where we can put this kid.
Because you're so tiny.
Yeah. and I'm the runt of the litter, if you can believe that. Dude. you see my brothers.
You come from an island of giants.
Yeah, and it's just instilling, a coach's job is to cultivate an ecosystem of culture, right? It's creating an ecosystem of culture, and how you do that, what it is that it lays down to is people come first, culture is second, preparation is third, and then execution is fourth, right? And so we look at people, culture, preparation, execution. And now,
that's kind of like John Wooden's pyramid, right?
What's that?
John Wooden, you know, pyramid of greatness.
Yeah.
But this is Love Jefferson's pyramid of greatness. What you just shared?
Yeah. People have their own take. It's all the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just different ways of looking at it. If we focus on those things and understanding that stress, what stress does, stress can enhance performance, right? So when we're under stress and you think of those high-level athletes – they're afraid. They're afraid when they go into a meet. They're nervous. There's anxiety when they go into meet. However, they spend so much time training their minds to where they flip that switch and they lean on their preparation.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like stress is nothing. I lean on my preparation when the gun goes off, and then it's time to execute with massive focus. And that stress allows us to dial in that manner.
And that's flow state.
Flow state.
That's yep. flow state, baby, right there. So accepting or actually seeking out a certain amount of stress, but leaning on your preparation, right? So preparation first, and then you find the stress.
Right. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. 5 P's.
Yeah, you know, there's something what comes up is because I was also an athlete. I wasn't anywhere near your level of it, but you learn a lot from athletics and how to play the game of life. And I'm curious, just because, again, there may be fire chiefs listening and sheriffs and chiefs of police and different departments that are in leadership roles. And I think there's a lot to be taken from good coaches versus bad coaches, because you get a good coach that cares about you. He can drive the shit out of you. You may not like it all the time, but you're like, thank you. You made me better. Mm. And there can be another coach has the same goal, but the way he does it, it stunts your growth versus pulling the best out of you. So I'm curious your experience of working with different coaches all the way up to the pro level of coaches as a player and experiencing, like, what was that difference for you? Like, what was the difference of somebody who created a culture that challenged you to get up, to be at your best? Like, what did they have to elicit? Did they hold you to a higher standard? Did they, like, I'm just curious, what were some of you had to distill down, hey, from the top level coach that's driving elite level athletes to perform at their best? What are a couple of the key nuggets they did to pull that out of you?
Yeah, you know, I think I've worked with many different types of coaches that had their own type of philosophies and way of doing things, right? We've all had that's been in this athletic race. I think what's majorly important for those that are listening is the work of the archetypes and Carl Jung's work and how you all do that. It's critical to understand that platinum rule rather than the golden rule, which Philip had introduced, where it's treat others how they would like to be treated, wherein lies the responsibility or burden to me to just get to know you or take time to figure out what makes you tick. And a lot of us in these combat, you know, warrior type of sports or athletics or training, there's a lot of tough love. And for some people, tough love works, right? Tough love and a coach that's riding you hard, that can work for some people that live in one of those archetypes, right? Or a few of them. However, it's very short-lived and it doesn't have as much length as loving tough, right? So there's a difference. And that was something that hit me. It's like, there's tough love, you know, get your ass up. Let's do this. Let's make this happen. That's good. The ones that I see and I reflect back that loved tough, which means not just letting us slide, not holding us accountable. It's holding a very, very high standard, right? So that standard is held high, and that you want to do that because of the love that you receive and the love that you have for that coach or that leader. And for some, stepping across that aisle and getting into that emotional intelligence space, it can be a challenge, but what challenges cannot be overcome? Of the billions of people that have walked the planet, there's not one situation that a human being has not experienced that they haven't overcome in the existence of mankind. So everything is nothing new under the sun.
Love tough. That's worth unpacking a little bit. That's kind of a new one for me. Does the coach have to model something first? Like when you say that ridiculously high standards, does the coach have to model that? And then other people will be inspired honorably to want to rise to that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's just my opinion. I think that the coach needs to model the culture that they are trying to create. Now, if the culture is a toxic culture, it's heavy push, it's heavy results driven, then you got to make sure you have all the right players, the right people in that to that that want to thrive in that type of environment. But like I said, the people, the culture, the preparation, the execution, we can't get past the people. For myself, when we do the archetypes, right, and we're rolling through it, everybody had seen me as, you know, this big imposing figure and ex-football player. and all of these different things. And then when it came down to getting it together, I'm like a lover. I'm that teddy bear. But remember, I'm still a bear, you know, you know, but at the same time, it's like, that's who I was. So that's what kind of made me tick. And coming from my background, just diving into it, like I said, I'm the run of the litter. So my mom's Polynesian from American Samoa, came here not speaking any English. My dad's from Jackson, Mississippi, left in the 70s, headed out west here to, you know, start a new life. And, you know, in my household, we had a bunch of big boys, man. If you got to the spaghetti pot last, you know, you're just scraping the bottom with some bread, you know, and that was a thing. And so as I was growing up, I always felt like the small guy. But then I head into the world and everybody's looking at the big guy. But in my brain, I feel like I'm eye level with everyone else, even the smaller people, because that's just what my world was. It wasn't until, and luckily I discovered sports, where I was able to unleash this
big guy
ability, this monster inside of me.
And you got to become the big guy.
Yeah, got to become the big guy. And then after I left the field, I still smell or felt like the small guy. You know, so there are things that people through their upbringing are going through that aren't really ready or open to share, you know, how they're feeling. But if we can reach them as leaders and just try to find out something about them before setting them up and telling them what it is that we need them to do in whichever manner, I think we can find a greater success that way.
Hey, I got to just pause out, Josh. I know you got questions too, but. What a beautiful, almost poetic statement of inadequacy story, or the old story. Every person watching, man or woman, has got an adolescent inadequacy story that is keeping them fucking small. What a beautiful way of saying that, you know, and great talk. Josh, you got something?
Yeah, I think what I mean, because Philip and I are actually working on this in our companies right now. We're, you know, we have teams, we have leaders, and we're like, we're changing our culture. So we're in this midst of like, you know, how do we show up at a different level? We're moving through our own inadequacy story and shifting into a greater level of leadership. So this is a really relevant topic for us right now. And I was really thinking about that conversation of really love that tough love versus loving tough. And one thing that's coming up for me is I almost feel like it's taking each individual person almost like they're on a team with the expectation that they want to become better. And so you're almost, as I'm tracking this, what I'm racking is we've been almost saying, here's the vision, let's go, and a disconnect from the individual level and like not really leaning in to say, hey, who's you? Here's your archetype. What's your vision? What's your role? And now how do I have to flex myself to push you to love you? What was it? To love you tough enough to not let you slip, like to not let you fall back to your old inadequacy story to tie in the inadequacy, but to challenge you to be great and the highest possible version of yourself and the way you need to be supported, which it almost feels like we turn into coaches versus it's a form of leadership is a coach, really the best coaches are leaders.
Josh, every single man and woman who's watching this is part of warrior culture, whether, you know, it's sports, first responders, cops. We have to play big. We have to be the big guy or the big woman when we are serving. Some scary shit that people are required to do. So it's mandatory that we find ways to be that bigger person, even though we have the smaller story running behind the operating system behind the curtain. We got to find ways to be that bigger person. And I think that might be one of the big things you're bringing to the table, love, with all these kids you're working with. I mean, what a great story, man.
Yeah. It's we need people. I'll just go, you'll hear me say it over and over again. People's important. So if you're a part of a team, if you're part of a company, it's a hard road. It's not easy. However, this is how the team can get to a high functioning, high level to make it happen. It's imagine. I don't know, Josh, if you have children or married, Philip, you have children. Just imagine if someone broke into your house, right, at night, your children were there, your loved ones were there. What would happen to that person? They wouldn't make it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They wouldn't make it out. And it's not because you hate that person. It's because you love your people much more than that. And that's the click of the goal of how we need to see those people that are busting their ass for us to get to where we want to be, we have to shift into that place where I don't hate the defensive end or the person across from me. I love this team so much. And I think when we break it down and just looking into like Maslow, like we just go back, I call them the three S's. And this is one of the things that I hope that people either look for in anything that they're a part of, or it's something that they try to create in a culture that they're in charge of. And so the three S's are safety, support, and a sense of belonging. So safety is making sure that people feel physically safe and emotionally safe, like you can connect with them. That's the goal, right? They can feel emotionally safe and physically safe. Support is them knowing 100% that you're there at all times to support them. But however, more importantly, it's them being willing and open and comfortable to ask for the help when they need it and not feel like they're going to be demeaned or not feel that they're going to be judged or not feel that they're going to be inadequate. So when people can ask for support, then you've knocked that out. And then the next is a sense of belonging. Like they see, this is the tribe I want to be a part of. Like this calls to me, this connects within my being. If we can create that or look for that in anything, do I feel safe when I enter into this classroom? Do I feel safe when I enter into the break room? Do I feel supported? If those things aren't clicking, then create it yourself.
Hey, we thank you for listening to the Winner Folsom podcast. Just a couple quick notes. First, if you are a man and you're looking for an honorable and inspiring group of men to hold you accountable and challenge you to grow in your relationships, your fitness, your career, your finances, and your life, go to www.k4men.com. And if you are a veteran, first responder, or man or woman who deals with trauma, and you are looking for some resiliency tools and skills for you, your team, and your organization, go to valorresiliency.com. Hope to see you there. Back to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a very specific fire department we trained. So we're really close to the guys and we know everybody. And a lot of them are in our men's community, but there's a breakdown. And this is exactly what I'm hearing. There's a chief and there's a captain, and the captains report to the chief, but the captains aren't feeling safe with the chief. And then when you see both sides of their personalities, they're all trying to do their best. But from a leadership down, if the captains aren't, to your points, don't feel safe, don't feel supported, don't have a sense of belonging, and actually don't feel loved is right. What I'm hearing beneath that, then they're essentially like, they hate their job and they can't wait to get out. So there's this guy that's a captain's like, can't wait to get out of the fire service. But mainly it's because of this chief. And there's just a miscommunication of they're both trying to do the same thing. But because the captain is not able to do this for his captain and see him and adapt himself to the captain isn't performing. And he's a really high performance guy. That's like, I've been here long enough. I'm just waiting to retire. So you see this like, wow, this massive barrier of what's happening in leadership. So I think it's very relevant for anybody that's listening, that's in a leadership role, wanting to move into a leadership role, is you have to adapt yourself and flex into the parts that aren't going to be comfortable. If you're a magician in our, you know, the archetypes, you're
analytical person.
You're an analytical person. You're going to have to get really flexible to deal with people that need a little bit more freedom. Like we would call them the sovereigns, right? Or the kings and the queens. Like you're going to have to adapt. Or if you got a heavy warrior that's very decisive action-based, and wants to move on mission and you take too long or make so learning how to adapt to your team. If you don't give them a little flexibility, they're going to feel restricted, or at least to your point, explain like, how do you get a little bit of a balance there? So you have a team that goes, oh, I love and trust you enough to make a decision and I got you. Right. So I'm seeing this very relevant right now. So I know anybody that's listening, this is why your organization's not performing at a high level. It comes down to probably leadership and not having tough love or loving tough. And these three S's, so really relevant.
I actually use you in the football analogy a lot, love, when I'm talking about the diversity on the team. Diversity is a thing that drives not only adaptability and innovation, but it's a thing that gives us this broad access to the specialization of greatness. Because people have greatness, and they have greatness because that's what the thing that they do. They don't have to do everything. They're good at one thing. And so when you take all these specialists who are really good at that one thing and you put them in the right positions, in the right culture that is aligned on a common mission, like, hey, we need to score more points. We need to get that big shiny cup at the end of the year. If you give them an alignment piece, those specialized men or women are the most competitive system that we have ever found in the leadership axis. So specialization drives that type of success. And you can look at it as diversity in behavior, diversity in age, diversity in gender, but it unlocks versatility. And there's been a lot of studies, you know, just about adaptability, innovation, and cultures. And the broader we can get of different people, the more innovative our cultures become, more competitive, but only if they're aligned on a common mission. I think that's where a lot of people are missing that understanding of a shared vision. Very hard to, particularly in our today's culture, which is so individualistic and almost exclusionary in a lot of ways, but to find that commonly shared thing is the part that we're missing responsibility. What are all these individuals? Like, we're doing a good job as a culture of celebrating these individuals. We're doing a shitty job at demanding responsibility of those individuals to something collective. And I think that we're missing that as a culture.
Yeah, Josh, you spoke to it with, you know, leadership and that that decision and that choice to adapt and how that's a challenge and that's a major barrier. And we'll take it back since I'm here today in sports, like applied sports psychology, there's three things. And this is how you decide. This is just it, right? And this is how high performance gets there. This is how Michael Phelps goes. This is how they do it. It's deciding, what do you want? Clearly, what do you want? How bad do you want it? And how much are you willing to suffer to get it? It stops there. And so whatever the value system is that holds you back, whatever it is, a decision, whatever is happening, it's just, what do you want? Do you want the culture to change? Do you want people to follow your direction? Do you want to connect more with your team? What do you want? Okay, well, how bad do you want it? Level it out. And then how much are you willing to suffer, compromise, or whatever it is in order to get it? And once people make that flip or that decision, then they can start cooking with something, because it's just, you're just jumping in new water. It's just new water, right? And just learn how to swim. You'll get there.
Yeah, to me, that feels like the adaptability. In the adaptability is the suffering, because we're going to flex into areas that are the unknown, that feel really comfortable, really messy. You know, you're dealing with what we would call a warrior, somebody that's highly decisive, that does great with conflict. You're going to have to engage with conflict. You're going to have to suffer in that conflict conversation and be willing not to be liked sometimes in order to gain respect and to honor. So, and the same thing, if you're on the flip side, you're a heavy conflict guy and you're dealing with somebody that's like what we'd call lover, you're going to have to be a little bit more mindful in your tone and how you communicate to somebody and really make it about them and the mission. So I think it's really, really about adaptability is how I'm hearing the suffering and little dying of who we think we're supposed to be of our own and accepting who we get to be moving forward, which is, I think a lot of leaders also have the inadequacy story running. So that part has to die. Like, who are we to lead this group of amazing, you know, men or women, right? And so how do we step into that and claim it, which is about service? So powerful.
There's this great book called The Twin Thieves. It was written by a high school coach during the COVID period, and he just decided to just jump on it. And the twin thieves, he looks at it, that we all have, and it's the fear of failure and the fear of judgment, right? And so in just what you said, Josh, it reminds me of a quote that Philip had shared many years ago that sticks with me to this day. And it's Joseph Campbell's, "In the cave you fear to enter lies the treasure you seek." And so it's that fear of failure. That
how bad do you want it? How much are you willing to suffer?
Right. And boy, once you step into that cave and you start walking towards the back and you're heading in and the light's losing you behind you and you're slow stepping, it's not until you get into the fully dark, you're immersed in that darkness or the abyss, to where your eyes tend to adjust, your ears tend to click, and you can find your way through it. But only when you fully step into the cave will you have that opportunity. If you're standing outside in the sunshine and you're contemplating and deciding and going in, well, not today, and going in, not today, you just have to decide and hit it. And that's the way to battle those twin thieves, you know, the fear of judgment and the fear of failure. and be consistent. Once your shift comes in, just be consistent. People are going to say, oh, you've changed, or he's different now. And then we jump back to our old self and go and try to figure, okay, that was, no, just stay consistent, stay in it, stay on the plan, do whatever it is you have to do and just keep trekking forward. Eventually you'll summit that mountain and then you'll just be looking for the next mountain to climb.
Dude, that's so brilliant that you got to go all the way in. Apocalypse Now, they say, you know, don't get off the boat. Don't get off the boat unless you're willing to go all the way, right? That was that scene with the tiger, Apocalypse Now. But there's a commitment piece. If you're going to get off the boat, burn that fucker. You are going all the way. Go into the cave. Give enough chance to get into the dark that your eyes can adjust. And then all of a sudden, it's not the dark cave anymore. Your cave. That's just a beautiful analogy, man. I'd never really thought of that. I just, that gave me a little chilly that I liked it. That was great, man. Awesome. I got a question for you as an athlete and as a man, I guess. Consistency versus intensity. You don't get in the NFL without having some intensity, but you can't sustain intensity forever, right? There's consistency kind of, I think, gets you there, but where does the intensity come in? This is like a little personal coaching just because you're on it with me.
So it all comes into preparation. It depends on how you're preparing. Take the gym, for example. You know, most people will go in and get on the bench and they'll do 4 sets of 12, you know, dumbbells. They'll do 4 sets of 12 and then they'll take their weight up, 4 sets of 12, 4 sets of 12, and they'll just keep climbing weight to 12. When in fact, the best way to build is to do a set of 12 at max rep, and then you do a try to get another 12 with the same amount of weight, but then you'll probably only hit 8, and then you'll probably only hit 7 on the next one with 15 seconds rest. You'll probably hit 5, you'll probably hit 4, and you do 20 reps of that. Where you're doing 1, okay, 15 seconds, because you're just burnt. 2, and you're just burnt. And it's not getting the 4 sets of 12 and then calling it and moving on to the next lift. And so it's just it's the way in preparation where the intensity will come along with the consistency. It will live together. Eventually, you get a guy up in your face, right? And you'll be able to fire him out with more ease, and you'll be able to do what you got to do in order to make it happen. And I believe that...
Was that you? Was that you blocking right there?
That was me. I was up under the shoulder pads.
Okay. Right up here. I just wanted everybody to understand what's going on.
To turn his body off and then you take him to the ground, take his body out of balance, and then you take him to the ground and just lay on him.
Pancake. Okay. So, wow, that was a little, there was a little weightlifting, a little coaching. And I have not gone to the gym yet today. So you go, well, after you get warmed up, you go heavy and hard. You are consistent with that heavy and hard and just lower the reps.
You max out on as much as you can, but you're going 20, right? You're going 20 rounds.
20 sets?
20 sets.
Motherfucker. Shit over here.
So, you know, jump on the 25s or jump on the 35s, but once you throw those up for 12, if you throw another one up for 12, you're not maxing out your potential. So, you know, jump on the 45s, get those 12s, hurt on them, and then get the next one. And then you'll probably do 9. 8 is usually around there. And then you just keep going until you just get 20 consistent. You do it flat, and then you do incline. And then you can do some shoulders if you still got it in you.
You know, in addition to this, what I love is this is like what I'm hearing is strategy, right? Different. You have the right. First, you got the consistency to get in the gym and the gym metaphor. And if you don't have that, you're not even in the game. But if you get in the gym and you make it consistent, now you can start to work on strategy. How do I actually, you know, what do I need to build? Why do I want to build it? Do I want to build muscle? You know, what do I want to do? But a big question I have, because this I think is when you're playing high-end sports, go back to the sports analogy, you can't play high-end to compete unless you're also doing active recovery.
Right.
And I'm learning that even just from starting my bodybuilding process of like, oh, now recovery is a much bigger deal than I ever realized in actually building muscle. I'm learning the recovery cycle and all these other pieces of it. So I'm just curious, like, so anybody listening, we deal with a lot of high drive, you know, high warrior people who live in this world that kind of dismiss recovery of, and that's in the culture. So curious, what's your viewpoint on active recovery? Meaning if you're outputting energy here, is it necessity to actually get your self-care in, get your recovery protocol.
And how, like, could you have gotten a couple more years out making that big NFL money if you were, had some of this wisdom now about recovery and patience and loving tough instead of tough love about yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There would have been more years to play. The recovery, I think recovery needs to be integrated into your daily routine. So for me, my daily routine over the past 4 months is 4 o'clock, the alarm goes off, 4:30, I'm in the kitchen, 5 o'clock, I'm at Planet Fitness, 6 o'clock, I'm doing functional fitness at a studio there for an hour, head back to Planet Fitness, I stretch, cool down, get on the hydro bed, and then get on with the day. And then five, you'll be proud of me, Philip, at 5 p.m., I'm doing jiu-jitsu.
No.
So I'm in there on the mat getting after it. Yeah. And
you must be fucking terrifying. Jesus Christ.
So cold plunges was the thing to do. And I started looking at, okay, well, what's the purpose of the cold plunge? And the purpose of the cold plunge is to activate that stress response of the fight and flight, right? So when you get in there and your body's just trying to fight and flight and jump out, you know, give it time to settle, and you will feel amazing after that. And so how I've integrated that into the daily routine is my morning showers are cold showers. They're just solid cold every morning for 10 minutes. And then after the 10 minutes, I warm it up and then I feel the relief of it warming up. And then everything feels better. So it's integrating that recovery into your daily. And I'm pushing 47. So, you know, my ankles are cracking. Things are hitting in a certain way, but I still feel like I could run a 4:09:40 at this point.
You are unusually fast for a largest human. And you can jump weirdly high too.
Yeah.
You got a weird vertical.
How tall are you? I know we're sitting on Zoom, so it's hard to see
loud. About 6'3". So 6'3".
It shouldn't be possible for you just to stand up and like leap up and grab rim backboard. It just doesn't seem like that was physically possible.
Well, I think you blame it on the breadfruit from the island, man. There's some taro or something, man. There's something in there. In that
what's up banana. With those people? What's up with those fucking people? What are they? What, that island? Like it's like a secret Spartan island that was just floating down there.
You know,
the savages.
None but farmers making your way, you know, grow it in the ground. No really great tools other than your hands and a stick and a shovel. And you're out there pulling it and fishing it and getting it to feed the family and share it with the rest of the island so everyone else survives. You know, that's just what it was.
Has anybody ever done any sort of a study on the percentage of Samoans in the NFL?
Yeah, it's the highest percentage. It's the highest percentage per capita of any other nationality in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, I just wanted to, before we go too off track from the resiliency, I just wanted to acknowledge that because, you know, we deal with a lot of people that they're new to learning about resiliency, especially fire, police. They may be okay with exercise because that's part of warrior culture. Like, oh, we train, we weaponize the body. But when we bring in resiliency practices, whether it be meditation, cold showers, you know, even spending time in community, you know, physical contact, vocal, like all these ways to basically regulate the nervous system and to put you back into balance. A lot of times there's some initial resistance. So I really love your strategy of like, oh no, this is what I do. And I just build it into my habit to stay functional, right? To stay at my optimal best. And so do you notice building in the recovery, you're better? Because I want to get I want people listening to go, why do I need to do this? Like, yeah, I get pushing myself to become in a more hypervigilant state to more stress and pressure. But if we don't balance out the other side, that's when your nervous system goes offline, you get stuck in hypervigilance, or you burn out the cortisol and crash and get depleted. So are you noticing moving from like the old school mindset of like push it, sprint all energy out until I break into more of like a marathon approach of like, oh, if I add in these resiliency protocols or active recovery, I come back into a little bit more homeostasis and I'm actually able to run the marathon versus the short sprint. Are you finding that?
You know, I'm finding the push has been working for me. This is after, mind you, after I hung up the cleats for 25 years of just recklessness, of just drunkenness, smoking, just recklessness, until most recent, where I got out of bed and my right Achilles wasn't working for me. I leaned up against the wall for a little bit and I was stretching and I'm like, I have to do something. So it got to a point where there was a trigger, there was a signal that said, okay, I have to create this shift and change. And once said, where can I create this shift and change? I put myself in that environment, which was getting a membership at a gym where I can, okay, now let me figure out from here, what can I do? And I'm picking up weights like I hadn't seen them in a quarter of a century, right? And okay, let's see what this does. Let's see what this does. Wasn't really feeling it. Then I just started YouTubing some things. I'm like, okay, here's a workout. Then I discovered a kettlebell. After I discovered a kettlebell, everything just changed. I'm like, this is it. And then it just opened up this path. So it's knowing when it is time to shift, putting yourself in that environment and allowing life to just open itself up and teach you what it needs to teach you to get you to what you want. And eventually you will be able to hit that marathon. I think folks tuning in here and listening or viewing this podcast, this is part of stepping into the gym. There's something there that they need to be fed or they want to be fed that makes sense. It's just what is going to be that trigger that says, okay, now I know what I want. I know how bad I want it. And I know how much I'm willing to suffer in order to get it. And so that's been the push. And if a marathon comes up, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to rip it.
Hey, I think there was probably an aspect of when you're leaning against the wall, fat and unhappy, that you probably had to do this for your kids too. I bet you that was you loving the people next to you on the line more than the thing you had to do for yourself. I mean, my guess is that that's probably part of it too.
Well, absolutely. I would say that would be 90% of it. Yeah. You know, it's just that 10% I'm enjoying so much that this 90%. And now I see my boys, my boy, he just started. I asked him, and we'll just jump real quick. I asked him, hey, son, you want to play football? He's like, oh, no, dad. I'm like, why not? He's like, oh, it's too violent. okay. So we'll do basketball, baseball, and do the thing. And then flag football came up. And I said, hey, how would you like to play flag football? He's like, do they tackle? No, they don't tackle. So he gets out there, and he's just a monster. Like, he's a beast. He's just got it, right? And now he sees me doing my thing. And so he and I, we're out there rocking it on the grass, you know, doing air squats and doing different stretches. And it was for them. And my daughter's running cross country. So now I'm getting out and getting after it with her, running cross country and helping her. And I'm saying, like, wait, these people need me to be able to coach them and show them the way. And so I love them so much that I'm willing to suffer for that.
Hey, I'm gonna put a little bow on this, and then we're gonna hear more about how people can get connected with you. The shift from tough love to love and tough, profound. The movement of clarity about not having to be reactive and defined about your enemy, but transitioning to the loving tough to the people next to you, profound. The realization that we need to go fully into the cave before our eyes finally adjust, amazing. All those S's, I'm just so proud of who you are and proud to know that man that you are, love. It's an honor, man. And you look great. You sound great. That just makes me happy, bro. So what a tremendous honor to have you on the show. And how do people get in touch with Love Jefferson and A1?
So the web address is a1programs.org. Love Jefferson at Facebook. That's just where I'm at in connection with people. You can reach me at love@a1programs.org if you like to connect via email. Also on LinkedIn under A1 Programs, Love Jefferson.
And you travel?
I am. I'm in Oakland right now. So I'm going to be up here working with the Napa Unified School District. We got about 200 folks. This is the second trip out here. I travel once a month. I come out to San Jose most of the time, Oakland Bay Area, and the rest of the things. I'm doing some coaching online. I'm working with couple student athletes at Washington State University. So I'm They're a leadership coach. Outside of this, we meet every other week. We have this curriculum that we're running down the line to see how they can take their ability on the field and translate that into their own personal lives for what we call the fifth quarter, life after football. And it's fun, man. Just getting after it.
Hey, and we always end with a challenge. What would be a challenge for anybody listening that they can take what they've learned and implement that? What feels like a good little challenge you want to give everybody?
Challenge, simple. Tomorrow, when you get up to take your shower, for 5 minutes, make it cold. And then after that, warm it up. Just 5 minutes. Sit in it and sit in that discomfort. Sit in that fight and flight. Sit in it. And then warm it up and stay in as long as you want. And then I guarantee you that day will seem different for you.
Living the suffer. What is it? How bad you want it? You got to learn to suffer.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Love. I love you. And
love you too.
Bro, stay in touch, man. Stay in touch.
Will do. Appreciate you guys. It's an honor.
All right, friend. See you, buddy.
We'll see you.